How are we feeling? How are we feeling? Yeah, it's a week. This feels like a really kind of poignant time, a profound time almost, to announce that I was approved for my green card. Couldn't be a more exciting moment to be in America. And I say that genuinely because exciting is a word that has many definitions, one of them being scary. reeling still, obviously, from the Jimmy Kimmel news. But beyond that, I don't know if people are familiar with the H-1B visa, but that has kind of really shook me to my core because so many people I have known being here as an immigrant have been on an H-1B visa. If you haven't heard, the latest from the administration is that TRUMP wants to charge companies $100,000 to sponsor highly skilled immigrants to work for their companies in a kind of incentive to obviously employ Americans, right? That's kind of not how the economy works, unfortunately, because education systems are different and they're just isn't the talent based in America to fulfill all the roles are required specifically in STEM fields. Chris is a structural engineer and he is surrounded by people on H-1B visas. It's really wild to 100x the cost. Oh yeah, it was $1,000 prior. I don't know if I said that, but to 100x the cost of what companies will pay. And Elon Musk has come out and been like, I will go to war on this issue because this is half of Silicon Valley we're talking about, or more, maybe 2/3 of Silicon Valley. So that is absolutely wild. Feels really crazy. I don't know if everyone else is just like experiencing this massive cognitive dissonance of like frog in boiling water syndrome, or I think there is a term for it. It's like conditioned normalcy or something of the like, where you're just kind of like, I am still getting an iced Americano with a splash of oat, and yet like there is a blatant attack on free speech. Both things exist at once. I felt that very deeply kind of last night when I returned to the club for the first time in a couple of weeks. A few weeks, maybe. And I was just kind of like, this is just really wild to be here and like to be drinking and the Titanic and the violinist, like not to paint too dark of a portrait, but that is kind of the vibes it's giving. And I just have to believe that at this point, this administration has pushed the public and the very fabric of democracy like too far, that pushback is inevitable. And I have been like incredibly careful up until this point to really try not to address politics as much as possible while I've been in this approval process. Still do feel like I can't say anything. I mean, look at what's happening. I took down Ivana and I's TRUMP Playboy interview episode, if the kind of the OG Argos remember that, which was very neutral and super kind of middle of the road commentary. We just read his Playboy interview out loud, but it just feels like a wild time to use your voice, which is really insane because yeah, that is obviously the foundation of democracy, is people being forthright and outspoken and opinionated. So anyway, that's all to say, made my triumphant return to the club and realizing that I may talk the talk and can't walk the walk the way that I used to, in that I took my shoes off on the dance floor, and I've been known to do that before. And it's usually like at a wedding when I'm in like a, you know, a floor length dress, and you can kind of get away with it. And we're like at the point where everyone is just like, you know, three sheets to the wind. But I was in a capri jean, so there's no really like, there's no hiding the bare foot when you're in a capri jean. It's also dangerous because you could get stepped on. Thankfully I didn't, but I was in like a peep toe heel, which I know that I've been talking about for 2 or 3 years now on this podcast as coming back. And I was in these peep toes, and they're very, very tall, and it had just been a whole night in them. And I was just on my last leg literally, and just couldn't do it anymore, and couldn't dance. And the music was, oh, fabulous. Like I'm talking Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe. I'm talking like Metro Station, Shake That. It was just like banger after banger. When I heard Trey Songz, I almost fell over, and not because I lost my balance, because I was bowing down to the DJ. I was in full worship. It was just on another level. Also, it kind of freaks me out, like the obsession with nostalgia, like how much wherever I go out, they are playing like hits from 2011. That's like kind of scary to me right now, because I'm like, is there any new music out there? And like, I feel like deeply, deeply out of touch because of it. I'm like, what is happening outside of Miss Tate McRae and Miss Sabrina Carpenter? Because like, I don't know it. I feel I'm just, if I go out to dance, all I'm hearing is like the music that I was dancing to in high school. It's like, oh, here we go. It's Usher. Yeah. Again. So it's kind of freaky. And like, our obsession with nostalgia, I think, is kind of a harbinger of how much we are obviously yearning for yesteryear. I mean, a lot of people are calling it a recession indicator, obviously, because it's recession pop. Did you know like the top TikTok songs of this year, like number one summer hits, was like a random person you've never heard of, kind of like a Lola Young type, but not Lola Young. And then the second biggest summer hit on TikTok was Black Eyed Peas' Rock That Body, a 2008 song. Like, does that not just kind of say everything? Really brings the point home. As I'm talking, I'm watching Dimitri try and climb into Chris's Adidas backpack, and it's a sight to be seen. He's in the backpack now. He's full. The whole body is in. It's just the tail that's out now. But no, it's kind of like one of those things that's all you can talk about. I'm like, oh my God, he's like going ham in this backpack. Okay, Dora the Explorer, like, what's that song? Backpack, backpack. Oh my God, I think I'm like... quite hungover. It's really a time, and we're gonna get through it together, hands held and bumping Black Eyed Peas, hopefully with the R word censored still, but who knows in this climate anymore. And you can thank Andrew Schultz for that. There's no easy transition, like there's no way out. Today we have such an exciting guest in that he is an Uggo. And I think this is kind of the first like true Uggo I've had on, who is also a reality television producer, currently an editor at E! News. So he really like has a foothold in entertainment, like kind of no one else. And beyond that, knows the ins and outs of the Housewives. Like no one I think I've ever met. I mean, we're talking Atlanta, New York, Salt Lake, Beverly Hills, OC, you name them, he knows them. And he was really upset with me because I was like, I want you to come on and I really want you to do a housewife. And he was like, oh, yeah, okay, fabulous. I want to do like, I don't know, like NeNe Leakes, or I want to do like Bethany Frankel. And I was like, oh, totally. However, I haven't seen those franchises. Can we do one that I know? And so we landed on Lisa Vanderpump, which, I mean, it wasn't his number one choice, but we are here and we've gone with it. And thankfully, Will Reed is a man of the people and very adaptable and a Libra. And so he likes to keep people happy. And for that, I'm so grateful and thankful. I'm so excited to have him on. A housewife has been a request from a couple of Uggos. Someone's been like, do a housewife. And now with the housewives coming back, it just feels like the perfect time. We need a very, very wealthy British woman with rose-covered china and miniature horses, and that's LVP. That's Lisa Vanderpump. Oh, and for a precursor, if you really want to dive deep into Vanderpump lore, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills lore, you can go back and listen to the Tom Sandoval episode that we did, Ivana and I. That was my first ever introduction into Bravo. Like, I had never watched a Bravo show, did not know who Tom Sandoval was. Ivana had watched Vanderpump, and that like opened my eyes to the point that now I have seen, obviously, I've talked about it so many times, Southern Charm, Summer House, Vanderpump, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Salt Lake City. Like, I've seen so many Bravo shows as a result. So go back and listen to Sandoval, an iconic New York Times profile if you feel like it, and then return here and listen to Will. I think it's important to mention that you woke up drunk this morning.
Call me out in the first 3 seconds.
I could have not. I was in a driverless car with you last night while you were screaming my neck, my back.
And also, I was so gone that I forgot all the words. I know all the words. I couldn't keep it straight.
You did quite well.
Thank you. But also, Ben had receipts. Our friend had receipts, and I was all over the place.
So there were some gaps.
But you can't mess up, so lick it now, lick it good.
No, you had that one part down. You had that part down. It's kind of crazy. I didn't know how many like words there were in that song until you rapped them all.
It's very in-depth. She's very clear about what she wants and in exactly what way.
Oh, no, it's like a woman's right to be licked is that song. It's like
In fact, it's almost as if it's what she's owed.
Exactly.
A woman's requirement.
Who sings that?
Her name is Khaya. K-H-I-A.
One hit wonder.
I suppose, yeah.
You but not whoa, willing to concede that?
Whoa, what a hit.
What a hit. Kind of Khalees-esque with Milkshake. It's kind of that's it.
Oh, yeah, but like this is...
This is something else.
Fully out there. Mm. Milkshake is more of like a tease.
Yes.
This is a like, this is explicitly what I'm looking for.
Right, totally.
There's no words minced.
That's the music we were raised on. We're in the car on the way to school, the radio's on, and we were 7 years old being like, pussy and my crack.
It really explains so much of who I would grow up to be.
And who have you grown up to be?
A wreck.
Welcome to Uncover Girl Will. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm thrilled. It's taken so long for me to get a seat at the table, and I'm so glad to have it.
We have Will Reed, producer extraordinaire, writer extraordinaire, but also just like all-round entertainment savant. Like, you know more than anyone I have ever met about pop culture, I think.
If I had this kind of knowledge about things that were like directly relevant to math or science, or I could have cured cancer by now.
Oh, for sure.
But here I am.
I think it's important. I think you do important
it
work.
It is important sociologically.
Yes.
But there's perhaps other purposes I could have been put here for. But here I am.
But here you are. And I think like you are contributing in a way that the world needs, which is like levity. Because listen. It's been a week. Yeah. It has been a week.
And let's leave
Papa.
It at that.
And let's leave it at that. We're both immigrants here at this table, and we have nothing else to say other than we're really happy to be here.
Thrilled to be here.
Thrilled to be here. Well, I just want to go through your television background just a little bit because I'm fascinated.
Sure.
But specifically, I want to touch on Are You the One? No, Are You the One?
Are You My First?
Are You My First? Oh my God, how did I get
streaming
that wrong?
Streaming now on Hulu and Disney Plus.
Wait, what's Are You the One? Is that something?
Yes, it is. MTV.
MTV. Okay. Are You My First, formerly Virgin Island. How long did it stay Virgin Island?
It was a working title.
Working title. Yeah. Kind of preferred it. Is what it
would have been perfect. Yeah, but you know what? Are You My First also works really well because it's still the concept of the show.
Totally. And you were on set in Costa Rica for that show. For anyone who doesn't know the premise, would you like to explain?
Well, it kind of is sold as Love Island for virgins. And I think other than the fact that Love Island is like 35 episodes strung across 6 weeks, almost live, ours is 10 episodes. It's a different kind of consumption.
Yeah.
But I think the structure is similar in terms of you've got these hot eligible singles and then you have the bombshells that show up and then you have eliminations, or as we call them, virgin sacrifices. So all those elements at play.
What is so crazy is actually how hot they are and normal for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were all very like, the only thing is that we all knew, of course, that they were all saying, I'm a virgin. Other than that, they're all very normal, regular people with normal, regular lives. Of course, everyone has quirks. We all do. And part of that, you know, getting on television is having enough of a quirk or enough of a unique characteristic that makes you intriguing to have cameras following you, right?
Oh, for sure.
So that's the only difference, is that it's like explicitly said.
How do you deal with, as a producer, and I feel this so often as a journalist, how do you deal with the kind of like emotionally manipulative element of the work? Because that is part of it, where you're kind of like, I'm trying to draw you into a narrative here, and I'm aware of that, and we're all playing our role.
It's definitely an aspect that I struggle with, because I'm not naturally I don't think I'm a manipulative person. I genuinely try to be, you know, honest and forthcoming and encouraging and those kinds of things. Like, I try to help people, and I don't think that reality TV or being a reality TV producer necessarily goes against that. Mm-hmm. But there definitely are situations where you know that someone is not going to necessarily look great, because of course TV is so based on conflict, right? Yeah. Not everyone's going to be a shining star at all times. But I think that's where you just kind of recognize that and know, okay, we're not doing anything that's going to, you know, you don't set out to ruin someone's life. And obviously it all is a heightened version of real life in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think going into it, if you as a participant don't expect some sort of conflict or some sort of situation where you might be shown in a less favorable light, you maybe are a bit naive about the process.
Well, it's kind of like playing roulette, right? You do not know how you're going to come out.
Yeah, because I think that you when you go on, you're not the one who's in charge of how it's going to look in the end. You're just there. You're participating in it.
Yeah.
And I will also say, I mean, being a producer, you do have a lot of opportunities to do the things that I like to do, which is to encourage people, to lift them up. You know, when they do fall into a situation and they're struggling or there's a conflict and then they need some sort of support, oftentimes they talk to the producers. We are there as their support system in addition to, you know, guiding them through whatever the process is.
From your knowledge, are there some shows where producers are more kind of hands-on than others?
More hands-on? That's a good question.
You know, I know that Housewives, they're self-producing a lot, famously. I think a lot of fans have pointed that out. You know, they're reading social media and they're responding in real time. But yeah, are there any shows that the producers are really involved?
Well, I think the types of shows that have more producer involvement are the like sequester shows.
Gotcha.
A show like a Summer House or a Housewives, by nature, because they are in and out of filming, they go back to their regular lives, they have access to their phones and things like that. That's, I think, part of why you have a lot of the cast members, especially on the Housewives, who do end up self-producing, because they can see how they're being received. They can step away from the camera, go back to their life, and then they come back on camera. If you're on a show where you are there with us for weeks, you're not going back to your real life, and your life then is consumed by the production that you're part of.
But what's your take on this season of Love Island? And like, there has been so much blame levied at the season's producers and the way that they've approached it, the casting obviously, and like just so, I mean, there's just so much criticism of this season. And I like wondered from your vantage point as like an insider if you can agree with that or see that there's any kind of like credence in that.
There was a lot said about Love Island this season. So what would you say is the...
You're right, there is so much. I mean, people said it was edited poorly. They said obviously like the vetting wasn't sufficient, with multiple cast members getting sent home for like racial remarks, but also that the producers were just like throwing a caution to the wind. Like they were just like mixing up the format willy-nilly. I mean, they took out movie night, they took out all these like tried and true segments or, you know, Love Island traditions that people love.
I think it's very easy for a viewer to have an opinion. And that's part of the fun of reality TV, is having an opinion. I think it's a bit unfair when you have the audience critiquing and nitpicking certain details, because of course,
and in real time, like this is coming out day to day.
And that, I think, is the big thing that I would say. I haven't worked on Love Island, but I've worked on similar shows where there's a quick turnaround. Under that pressure, when you are filming so much and you're always, I imagine they are editing and re-editing and taking stronger scenes and swapping things out up until the deadline that they have to submit to Peacock.
No, the sheer amount of content that they're putting out is kind of like unbelievable and almost like unsustainable. That's why it feels like...
Well, that's also why these shows don't go on. Like a Love Island is not on for months at a time, because you would have crew burnout.
Yes.
In addition to cast burnout. And that, I think, is part of it too, is like when the cast, as I said, is on it and they're so wrapped up in this world that is not... It's heightened again. It's a created universe. You can't sustain that for more than like, what, the 6 weeks or so that they filmed that show. Even that is really stretching it.
What were the kind of parameters for cast on Are You My First? Was it the same as Love Island where it was like, you can't drink?
There were guidelines.
Okay.
But also the thing is, on Are You My First specifically, we didn't really have drinkers on our cast. It's the one reality show where because a lot of them are very strong in their faith, Mormons and the Christians, and it was the one time we worked on a show where you didn't have cast that was kind of always like, oh, I'd love to have some of this, or I'd love to have whatever, right?
MILF Manor.
What a journey.
Please explain the premise of that show.
I would say it's the diametrical opposite, Dorit, of Are You My First, in terms of just like the out there-ness of it, the kind of balls to the wall brashness of the concept, which was in season one, which I didn't work on. It was older women who were divorced or in some way single but had kids, and they went to date younger men. They get to this resort and it turns out all the younger men are each other's sons.
It's diabolically brilliant.
Diabolically brilliant. I think the concept is incredible. Yeah. I think that's a show where it was missing a bit of the romance element. And it's tough in cases where you've got like a 20-year-old guy and a 60-year-old woman. Like, do you really have in common in some cases?
Yeah.
It's tough. But then in season two, we did older women dating younger men again. Not each other's sons, okay. Thankfully. Day two, these new arrivals, the sons' fathers. The younger men and their dads are dating the same women.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So then you have ego and father-son dynamic.
Competition.
And I think the interesting aspect was all the fathers and sons had very different dynamics among them. You know, there was one set who had kind of been, I don't know if formally estranged, but had kind of a dicey relationship. And then you had a father and son who were very close, and the father had been recently divorced and kind of struggled with dating because of that, because the divorce was so painful, still so fresh. So you had all this different spectrum of relationships there going on.
How do you cast that show? I mean, how do you get people to sign up for it?
Look, all these people on TV want to be on TV.
Right.
Generally.
Any way, any shape, any form.
Yeah. And I don't blame them. I mean, the idea of having an audience or being told the idea that there would be interest in you, that you are somehow special or intriguing. I think that's part of the draw. The idea of a dating show, I think people do look at it and go, okay, well, you know, I'm open to whatever, see what happens. And we've seen successes. We've also seen where people can go on a show, and even if they don't fall in love, they can find a following. Or
sorry, I'm so deep in this right now because I'm so interested. But what do you think is the most successful reality show on television right now? I mean, outside of like the Love Islands, which obviously, I mean, the streaming numbers are bonkers.
Yeah.
What format do you see as really thriving?
I mean, Survivor's been going on steadily forever.
Like, I think Survivor might be.
And I'm not really a Survivor watcher, I hate to admit it.
Yeah, no.
But I know that Survivor has this like legacy, right, of being this bonkers competition that has all these returning players. And what you're put through as a contestant, I think, is what really makes that stand out. But the fact that that audience is so loyal, still 50 seasons in, 25 years later, is really a testament to that show.
Do you know what that host gets paid? Isn't it something like absolutely outrageous?
Jeff Probst?
Yeah.
I have to imagine he's also a producer on the show.
Right.
So I think there's probably that element to
back end
it. And well. I think part of, I think because audience loves him and associates him so much with the show, you maybe can command a bit more in negotiation. A Seacrest, people who are so synonymous with the shows that they anchor.
Okay, yeah. $3 million a season.
Not bad.
Yeah. Some have placed the figure higher at $4 million. But this was back in 2017. This was when it was last reported.
Wow.
Do you see an argument for like the ethics component of those shows, the sequestered shows that we're talking about, the Survivor and the Love Island? Well, it's Lord of the Flies, right? You take people out of their comfort zone, totally seclude them, they're isolated, they're on a different schedule. I mean, in Love Island, they literally don't have clocks. They don't know what time of day it is or what day it is. And it's a completely different lifestyle. And then it's just like, okay, survive. Like, I know personally that Love Island would drive me insane. Like, I just know that about myself. I could not handle it. Just walking around that villa like a pig in a pen in a bikini.
In a bikini, no less.
A pig in a bikini in a pen.
Me neither.
I know. And it's just like, and obviously it's hugely popular. They will get hundreds of thousands of applicants next year.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it. I've seen the open castings. It was, you know, down the block.
Yeah.
Obviously, we signed up for this and we're coming out into like a massive fan base just built in. But what are the ramifications of that? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what I'll say is, first of all, having worked firsthand on these shows, I know that the care teams for the talent works really hard to make them feel protected, make them feel taken care of. In the ones that I've worked on, you have people who really care about the cast, and there are guardrails in place to make sure that they're taken care of. For instance, on like a Big Brother, I know that there's been conversations in terms of the whole genre on how can we kind of protect the cast more, how can we make sure that their mental health is taken care of.
For sure.
And I think that, you know, having like a therapist or something accessible is always important. And I think I know a lot of these shows do.
Okay. So then from your POV, watching someone go through like a massive emotional high highs and low lows of a character like Hoda. I mean, a lot of people were like, get her out of there, not because she's difficult to watch, but because like she doesn't seem mentally well in that moment. What was your take from the producer's standpoint? Because obviously like this was the other, you know, theory is that the producers were trying to keep her in there as long as possible because she made great television. But also this woman is like stomping around the villa, throwing a tantrum every 2 minutes. And it's like, this can't, if she's regressing to a 7-year-old emotional state, then she can't be healthy and happy.
I totally imagine there's a level of we want to keep this going, we want to milk the cow a little bit. But I think I know that there were certainly conversations about her well-being. There must have been.
Yeah,
because,
for
of
sure.
course, if we're seeing it, then they're also seeing it. And they're seeing it more thoroughly. They're seeing the stuff we aren't seeing on TV.
Yeah.
Right? The other 23 hours of the show in the day. All these shows have their own checks and balances where, like, they're not keeping her against her will. If she had said she wanted to leave, like,
she's
then there
gone.
Would be a serious conversation about that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. What is inspiring you, Will?
That's a great question. I think the thing that's inspiring me, I think, is the concept of growth. Especially now where it feels like there's so much going on around us, culture and politics and all this. It's very easy to get downtrodden about that. And mm-hmm. so I when that does happen for me, I try to be like, okay, well, what are the things that I can do to, you know, move myself forward, to be a positive force for the people around me, be a positive force for myself, you know, not be too hard on myself, given the fact that some days there's just like, okay,
when you say being hard on yourself, are you referring to not being like active enough, not activating for the community or against the forces that be?
Oh, I think just in my daily life. I think just where am I going in my career? What am I doing with my personal life? Or what am I, you know, those kinds of questions when those come up and the answer is not really clear a lot of times. I just try to think more groundedly and go, what is driving me this Wednesday? How can I make this Wednesday the best that I can, you know?
Interesting.
Because there's only so much energy we have in a day. Some days it's just like, okay, well, you know, I got this going on at work, or I got this thing I got to do tonight, or I got this thing I got to do first thing. So at some point, I'm going to just like put on my show and kick back and like relax and allow myself to relax.
What from culture is inspiring you right now?
The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
Are you enjoying?
I did enjoy. The premiere to me felt like a scripted dramedy.
Oh, very much so.
And for me, that's a neutral observation. That's neither a critique or a compliment. That just is.
It is so funny listening to you talk because you are in this industry. You are being so politically correct at all times because it's a reality. Like, you may get hired on one of these shows one day. That's totally fair. But also, you are so empathetic for the production team. Like,
because I've been
because
in
you've
it.
Been in
I
it.
Know that.
I know,
when
it's
you're,
just so funny.
When you're doing a show that's 10 episodes, and everyone is like, you're filming hours and hours and hours and hours a day.
Yeah.
As a crew member, our world revolves around that too. Like, we have the ability, unlike a cast member, to step off at the end of the day and have our phones with us and be in touch with our loved ones and stuff. But we're also like, I was in Costa Rica away from my loved ones for a month.
I have one question and I want to go back to Salt Lake City, but have you ever known a crew member to date a cast member on one of these shows?
No, I think that's usually a thing that's like explicitly forbidden in
like,
a contract.
Okay, you're gonna they're gonna fuck you up if you I wonder if afterwards there's ever been any crossover. To your point, you're with these people 24 hours a day. They may not be the ones presented in front of you in camera. It's like, this is the buffet to choose from. It's like, actually, this is the person who is checking in on you, having a good time with you, and it's not manufactured. It's like real conversation.
This feels, unless I'm making this up, I feel like this was either something that has happened where a producer and a cast member fell in love, or that's a plot line and like Unreal.
Oh my God, it needs to be a plot line if it isn't. It should be like a romance novel. But I absolutely agree with you with the Salt Lake of it all. It was so unbelievable that a housewife would book a girl's trip in an abandoned trailer park in an RV, that someone would show up with camcorders that it then turned into the Blair Witch Project.
It felt like a sitcom in that the episode opened with, oh, everyone's meeting up at Beauty Lab. We've been here before. Like, it's familiar territory and they're all getting on, and you bring in each personality one by one, mm-hmm. and you reintroduce them to the audience, and they just pick up and go on a road trip. Like, that felt like the plot line out of like an 80s sitcom. A sitcom is a situational comedy. So that was the situation they were put in. This is the RV. We're going to get our cast and see what happens.
Baby, in this house, it's out with the old, in with the new me. You thought we were done with new me hair? Never. Never. Actually, no, for real. Someone came up to me the other day and was like, are you using new me the way that you say you are? I don't know how to emphasize this enough. Anytime that you see me, my hair has been done with some type of new me tool or product. I use the straightener every time I do my hair. I use the blow dryer. And recently they just sent me the blow dryer brush. freaking like game changing. If you're like a blowout person or you just want to kind of like smooth your hair and have that kind of one step process, it has this infrared heat technology, same as the straightener, by the way, where it seals in the hair cuticle and reduces hair damage, basically like locking in moisture. It's very, very good. And I am someone who has been gifted by a very popular vacuum cleaner brand. You know the one. And it is right on par with that. And it's half the price. Penelope, chill out. Ironically, she's playing with her hair tie. Penelope, stop it. It's super light. So your arm never gets tired. Your hand never gets sore. Your hair comes out shinier than ever. And you can take off 15% with the code UNCOVER at newmehair.com. That's N-U-M-E hair. Listen to me. I love new me. And I'm going to love the new you even more. And the critique I heard actually about it was that like it all took place in one area. Like they were like freaked out that it was just in this one RV parking lot.
Well, that's another concept of traditional television, which is a bottle episode.
Yeah, it's kind of like a play. Yeah. Yeah,
like, yes, it had the cutaways and the confessionals and stuff, but overall, the drama, meat of the episode was all in one place.
Yeah, and kind of jarring for the viewer when mm-hmm. we're used to being like, okay, now we're getting Botox with them. Now we're going shopping with them. Now, you know, now we're going to a restaurant and having yeah. lunch with two separate characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that they were just all together in one place. It was bizarre.
But the content was there, and that's, I guess, why, right?
Yeah, I guess the content was there.
Oh, tea.
It wasn't not entertaining, but I didn't feel like it had the same spark. They're so aware.
That's, of course, what happens too. Like, as you go on these shows, the cast inevitably sees the response to them. They're influenced by that.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of Mary M. Cosby mm-hmm. talking about Bronwyn, because this is Bronwyn's second season on the show.
Yeah.
And how Mary's take was that she was so concerned with
the image
and yeah. how the audience will receive her and wanting to be loved by everyone, right? And Mary was kind of like, you're never going to be those people who are going to set out to hate you.
Yeah.
Right? So like, you can't set the goal of, I'm going to please everybody, because you're not going to.
Well, I think this is a perfect transition into LVP, because she is someone that for such a long time on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills was probably the most loved cast member, would you say?
Yes. I think the fact that she has this like over the top opulence in terms of like a real housewife of the glitz and glam that you look for in that kind of personality, and also the larger than lifeness, that's where she comes in.
But she was always winking. She was always in on the joke. She was always like one of us. She describes herself in this profile, which we'll get into, as like, I'm the narrator. I'm not the narrative.
Yes.
And that very much like comes across. And then Andy Cohen counters that by being like, yes, but she's actively stirring the pot at all times. She'll be like, your husband's not around a lot, and the implication is he's having an affair. Mm-hmm. And then she will just kind of light the match and watch it burn.
Right.
So that is something that's really interesting, because I'm a deeply influenceable like viewer. Like, I will really go with whatever that they're telling me. And I really fell off with LVP exactly when they told me. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, oh my God, this woman is scary and manipulative and evil. Exactly when she was presented that way.
Right.
But LVP's power is that she managed to kind of like rise above right. her villain arc.
And as you said too, like the way that at the end, she's painted as a villain more clearly, or painted as an antagonist. I got to wonder if part of that is just the fact that she left very abruptly. She just like stopped filming mid-season.
I think so, yeah.
Didn't go to the reunion. And I think that you automatically become the villain, right?
Yeah. So is that kind of the biggest crime in any of these Bravo shows that one can commit, is not going to the reunion?
Historically, yeah. There's only... I actually made my notes.
Oh my God, I love you. I love you making notes.
I made a note of all the housewives across the whole franchise, the whole Real Housewives franchise who have ever skipped a reunion. There are only 9. There are over 100 housewives.
What?
9 have skipped a reunion.
That's crazy.
But varying reasons.
Okay,
so
okay.
For instance, I mean, the one that's... I don't think this was the first, but it's one of the early ones. Jacqueline on New Jersey.
Okay, I didn't know her, but yeah.
So she skipped the season 3 reunion because they were midway through filming season 4 and something, the stripper scene, if you've watched New Jersey, you know.
Yeah.
Jacqueline was so mad that she would not attend the reunion. And Andy said that he was so pissed about it. It's the only time that they've done that, where they started filming on a new season right away before the reunion and anything like that. And it's the last time they've done it because of that situation where they're upset about new things or there's new conflict,
oh.
right? Resolve the season first and then go into the next one.
That's so, that was Jacqueline. Interesting. Okay.
And then there was like, well, actually, let's go through all nine. Yeah. So there was Jacqueline, LVP, of course, season 9 of Beverly Hills. Adrian Maloof.
Maloof. Oh, that's a very famous
season
one.
Season 3 of Beverly Hills, because at the time it wasn't said on the show, but there was the whole scandal about Brandy outing her as having had a surrogate for one of her kids, and so they didn't talk about it. She threatened to sue the show, and so they had to censor it.
Yeah, can you give some more context on that? Because that was one of the most specific scandals. And I mean, all the Beverly Hills scandals were very specific. It was like, does Yolanda have Munchausen's or like not? Like, it's like, is she making up that her kids are sick? Or like, it's really crazy.
Did you plant this rumor about my dogs?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very, very specific, but also like Shakespearean, as Alison P. Davis describes in this profile. The surrogate was so strange because no one would say aloud on camera. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was watching it, going to the message boards and try and work out what was going on.
Yeah.
Adrian Maloof used a surrogate for her pregnancy and lied about it. Pretended she had a natural pregnancy.
Yeah. I don't remember how Brandy brought it up. Of course, Brandy brought it up.
Of course.
But I think it was the fact that she just didn't want that to be known publicly. I think it's really clear why that was such a touchy subject at the time, but it was.
Yeah.
And to the point that she stopped filming, she didn't go to the reunion, and she threatened to sue the network over that. So I imagine, too, with the cast, she was like, don't say anything, don't say anything.
Again, it's such a niche and feels like non-issue, right? It's like a non-starter.
Totally.
You use a surrogate. You are one of the richest women in the world. Yeah, you want to probably keep your body tight. That is what I'm imagining.
And also, you want to have a kid. Like, you had a kid by the means that you were offered or that you sought out, and you had a kid. Like, great. So that's Adrian.
Yeah.
Kim, season 2 of Beverly Hills. A lot of Beverly Hills skippers.
Yeah.
And Kim is one who did come back because she was dealing with her alcoholism. I think that was the season that she had like a separate interview with Andy versus being at the reunion because she was, I think she might have been in treatment or she'd gotten treatment around that time and said, I'm an alcoholic. Luann, season 10 of New York, rehab.
Right.
Mary Cosby, season 2 of Salt Lake. She'd said something that was controversial or that I guess didn't want to be accountable for. Jen Shah, Salt Lake City, season 3.
Famously.
Because this was after she was sentenced, and it was a back and forth in the media where she was like, I wasn't invited, and then they invited me, but they said I had to talk with the case. I'm not going to talk with the case. I'm not going to go. Andy, of course, and the network were pissed, but there we are. And then now she's, of course, serving her sentence alongside Elizabeth Holmes. Karen Huger, season 9 of Potomac, because she was convicted of DUI. She, I think, said that she was looking for, she was going to work on herself. She was on a journey. And then, of course, she was sentenced weeks later to a year in prison.
The number of run-ins with the law is actually astounding. And you would think it's just tax evasion. Like, that's what you would imagine it to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Karen also had a tax scandal season 3.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I think part of it is a show like this where you're elevated and you're told that, again, you're special, that you are this larger-than-life personality, and we want cameras following you because you have this glitzy, glamorous life. I'm sure some of that, to a lot of them, goes to their heads. The last one is actually the most recent, Britt on season 16 of Atlanta, which was so stupid.
Oh my gosh,
so stupid. The fact that she didn't
I don't
go.
Watch Atlanta, but I heard all about this. Thank you for coming with research. You're the first person to do that since Chris.
You know I love a receipt.
I know, and it's like, it's funny, the men always come with stats, which I find really interesting. It is one of those things where it's like, you don't show up to a reunion. You are really letting down everyone.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team effort. If you can't stand on business and like face what you've done.
Well, think about a job, right? This is their job. They do receive a salary for it. If you have a performance review.
So what are the ramifications though, if you skip?
Well, that's the thing. It's very diverse, right? As I said, Kim came back, Luann came back. But generally, a lot of these end up, they leave. And I imagine it's because, well, okay, you're not showing up. So either it's them quitting. In LVP's case, she had said, I am leaving the show. So she didn't go to the reunion. But it's like presumed when you go that you're leaving because like, okay, well, I'm not going to answer for it. And then the network, of course, goes, okay, well, then you're off the show.
Right.
Right. Like I wouldn't even call it punishment. It's just kind of the natural order.
It's also like there are people who have showed up for reunions under much worse circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Like Tom Sandoval and Raquel. Those were tough reunions to get through.
Yeah, but they showed up.
They showed up.
Give them credit for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, part of it too is that they were at the center of the scandal and it fed into more attention. You could look at it that way. By doing this, they're elevating their exposure by going to the reunion, and maybe that's part of what they want. But it is still a tough thing to go to and have to answer for these things, right?
The anxiety attached to it must be just immense. It's funny. I feel like the tradition of Uncover Girl recently has been like, chat, like a little bit of profile. But I knew, like, coming into this with you today that we were going to be getting into the profile First of all, it's written by Alison P. Davis, who I don't know if you know the lore of her. She is one of the most iconic writers of all time. First of all, she coined the term big dick energy about Pete Davidson.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure he loves that. He's made it clear.
He's made it very clear how he feels about that. You know, I had the most interesting conversation with a girl who dated him the other day. That I have to say for the Patreon. I can't say that on air, but yeah, met a girl who dated him and she had stories. Alison P. Davis wrote the very memorable Meghan Markle profile in The Cut. This was a couple of years ago, went totally viral. Meghan Markle was like interviewed in her Montecito mansion, and it was so famous because she just seemed incredibly out of touch. She was launching her podcast. She had a lot of things kind of like going on and cooking. And basically the way she came across is that she had very much leveraged the royals to end up right where she was. And yet, of course, as is classic kind of Meghan, you know, was hating every moment of it. And that was like the great duality and irony of the profile. And I did end up talking to Alison P. Davis about it. I kind of reached out to her on email and was like, would you come on and talk about this? And she was like, you don't even understand the level of trolls that I had to deal with in the wake of that. But there is no one who writes like her. She is superb. And this profile of LVP is beyond. The headline is, Lisa Vanderpump is the royalty America craves. How one Real Housewife rules the franchise. And I'm starting there because I know you don't agree with that.
Well, it's not that I don't agree. I think it's just interesting that you're putting that in print. Yeah. And consider the context. This is 2017.
Yeah.
So when people have the conversations about the best housewives, you always have LVP involved in it. You usually have Bethany. You usually have NeNe Leakes. You often have Luann.
Yep.
They're just examples of who are always kind of cited as the best of the best. And so for her to point blank say at that time, when I believe all of them were still on their respective shows.
They were. Yeah, they were. She even says that. I think she references them.
She referenced, yes. And I do have it highlighted here.
Atlanta has NeNe. New York has Countess Luann. Orange County has the dignity of being patient zero and not much else. She says, but of all the housewives across America, Vanderpump has emerged at the forefront. Do you agree with her?
The aspirational element that she has, she's so filthy rich,
yeah.
You know, and the life she's got. She's got this husband who fawns over her and kids and businesses and these dogs that she's obsessed with and loves animals. You know, I can see where that is cast as, and I can respect that as being kind of the whole package of the Real Housewives. You could, though, make the argument for other women in the arena who also fit that bill. So I think to call her the queen of the housewives, you know, you could take NeNe, for example, right? NeNe is someone who is so closely associated with the Housewives franchise. Even outside of it, she's someone who has had this massive influence on popular culture.
Yes, for
because
sure.
You can think of her catchphrases that have become memes, that have become GIFs, that have become cultural touchstones.
Okay, drop a couple.
Not a white refrigerator. I mean, listen, there are scenes of hers where she dropped multiple cultural touchstones.
Just great talent. Just totally. Like incredible talent, yeah.
She now is the reason why no one wants a white refrigerator in their home.
No, that's so true. No, I think of her and I haven't even seen the show. I mean, this is what's crowned LVP in this moment, is that she is allegedly the highest paid.
I saw $500,000 per season. I know that's not the case.
That's not...
That feels very low.
That's very low, right?
If she was ever the highest paid, that might have been... But I can't imagine, again, if this is 2017, that there weren't others making more.
$500,000 per season. I mean, I just only recently found out that they pay for all their own trips.
There were two books about the housewives that were published in close succession. There was the unofficial one called The Housewives, and then there was the Not All Diamonds and Rosé, the official Bravo, like, spoken oral history. Right. Citing sources, this unofficial book said that it kind of depends on the context. If they're going on the trip anyways, or if there's a thing like a party, for instance, then they'll throw it. If it's a trip, like a cast trip, where they are taking the crew and they're doing whatever, I think in those cases, the network does pay for the trip.
Really?
Yes.
So I heard it was fully self-funded by the women. Like, if they're going to Cancun for 4 days in the 5-star hotels, like, one woman is footing the bill.
No, I can't imagine that's the case.
Yeah.
Because I think that's often where, like, they'll go, okay, you're the one who's going to be throwing the trip, and they'll have them on camera.
Yes,
and the woman
right.
go, okay, you know what? I want to bring us all together. We're all going to go to Cancun.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But, like, they're not paying for 12 of the girls, especially the ones I cannot stand, right?
That's so true.
That's my thinking, at least.
Yeah, it doesn't add up. And especially if they're making this low money.
Yeah, if you're making $500,000 and you're going to spend $100,000 of it on a trip.
And this is the great tragedy of the Housewives, is that they are struggling to find women of wealth the way they did in the early seasons of Beverly Hills, because right. what comes with it now is extreme scrutiny, extreme critique, and also not a lot of money.
So what the women bring to the show is often a consideration.
Yeah.
Denise, for instance, I believe got a high salary because she's Denise Richards, right?
Richards, yeah,
Bethany, after having been on the show for a while and leaving and then becoming Skinny Girl and then coming back, she was commanding, I think, $1 million a season, according to the unofficial book, The Housewives.
And we were talking about this last night with just friends and fans, but I mean, someone's take was like, Denise was too famous. I mean, this is very relevant because of Charlie Sheen right now and seeing her back on our screens, but their argument was like, she was too A-list to be on Housewives.
Yeah, she's too recognizably Hollywood.
Yes.
And I remember the reunion that Lisa skipped, season 9, was Denise's first reunion. And I remember the energy that they had a celebrity amongst them. Like, yes. She was treated like this, like a celebrity guest on a talk show.
Very much. And they went easy on her until they couldn't anymore.
Well, of course. And that was an early, that was an easy season for her. The next season for her, of course, was the one that she was under the scrutiny.
I mean, the bravo, bravo, bravo of it all.
God bless.
Wait, do you want to explain that for those who don't know?
The scene where she was filming with the women and they're asking her in season 10 about this alleged tryst she had with Brandy, one of the co-stars.
A lesbian affair.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was married at the time to a man. She's now estranged from. They're now going through a divorce. And so this allegation, she wasn't pleased about it. And they're all talking about it on camera. And she, at this dinner, looks to all the cameras and goes, bravo, bravo, fucking bravo. The theory is that there was supposedly, if a cast member would say, bravo, 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 that would not be aired. They aired it.
Yeah.
And I think Andy said, no, that's not the case.
But they also did a supercut of how many times they had cut based on Denise Richards saying, bravo, bravo, bravo. And it was like many dinners, many occasions, she had tried to kind of interfere with production by shutting it down and saying, bravo, bravo, bravo. And this was the one time that it didn't work, clearly. Yeah. She pushed it too far.
Yeah.
That season gripped my throat like I've never experienced with television. I did not know. It was all I could talk about. I had to explain it to Chris every night. I was like, this is unbelievable television that I'm watching play out.
Yeah.
With one of the biggest stars in a alleged queer relationship with another woman on this show after she's been recently married to a man. Like, and this is, it's all playing out in real time on camera. Like, this is unbelievable. And more than that, she's shaken by it. She's not laughing it off. She's not saying like, oh my God, this is par for the course when you're on this kind of show.
This is the thing for me with those kinds of scandals. When there's smoke, there's fire.
Right.
Right. And so I'm not saying that the story is entirely true, but there has to be for me some reason why she was so rattled by it. If it was completely made up out of thin air, I imagine she would go, oh, that's crazy. What do you mean? And then laugh it off and they move on.
Exactly.
But the fact that she was so, well, what do you mean? Bravo, bravo, bravo. Like, shut it down.
It was giving like the woman doth protest too much. Like, it was like, really, like, slow your roll, babe. Like, you look guilty. You're looking guilty. But back to LVP. So Allison meets her first at Pride and she's like kissing babies and dogs and living her best life and being this beautiful
pageant queen
on camera, vision, curvaceous blowout, the whole nine. And then their second meeting, the time when they sit down for kind of like the meaty interview, Lisa Vanderpump doesn't know she's coming over.
Yes.
Allison shows up at her house and there's been some kind of scheduling mix-up, conflict, whatever. And
with this assistant who no longer works for her.
That is the magic of Allison P. Davis, this writer, because she will just cut to the quick. So she's like, yeah, there was clearly a scheduling mix-up because I show up and Lisa Vanderpump, who's usually dripping in diamonds and totally made up perfectly and all the things, is wearing a white t-shirt and jeans and her hair's kind of wet.
And only a few diamonds. She was wearing diamonds.
Thank you for correcting me. That's so true. She was wearing a few diamonds. But she wasn't in her typical attire. And Allison's like, oh, this is crazy. Like, she's really pared down for me. And Lisa Vanderpump is like, well, I actually wasn't expecting you. And there was some mix up with my assistant. And then Allison puts in parentheses, she's been let go.
Yes.
The implication being over this drama. But she's already off kilter. Lisa Vanderpump never gets ruffled. And she is ruffled here in this interview. Lisa, to me, now knowing what we know, now hearing what we've heard from the Sheena Shays of the world, from the Ariana Maddoxes of the world, from everyone who's gone on to be a star from her spin-off Vanderpump Rules, what do you make of Lisa Vanderpump? Who do you think she is?
I think at the core, there's a lot of what we do see. I do believe she's a very opulent person. I obviously she's got compassion if she's so passionate about these dogs, about, you know, crusading for animals, and she's got this long-standing marriage. You know, there's elements that show the humanity of Lisa, but there's mm-hmm. also elements that show the grandness. I think for me, it is that detail where Allison catches her off guard. She's got the t-shirt and jeans on, but she is still wearing diamonds.
Right.
There's always an element where she is put on, because I think there's a level of kind of showiness that she just has naturally.
And a sense of superiority. Like, she needs to remind you that she's better than you.
Yeah.
And without that, she doesn't feel like herself, I think. And it's really interesting to hear her describe the early seasons of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which people put down as pop culture canon, like some of the best television that anyone's ever seen. That was the first Real Housewives I ever watched. Mm. And it hooked me.
And I get it, because it had the scandal element, right? It has both of the things that have become major elements of the Real Housewives franchise. It's got the opulence, the over the top, the money, actual money.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also got the drama, right? Season two is harrowing television.
Oh my God. Season two of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, gut-wrenching, like floor-shaking television. She was watching how the women were fighting, tears, screaming, crying, and she went back to her husband, Ken, and she was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, And that first season, they won a Critics' Choice Award, and she was like, well, damn. And this is the thing, like, she is always going to favor accomplishments, accolades, traditional success over what might be emotional stability and general fulfillment.
Exactly. I mean, consider also that Vanderpump Rules recently got an Emmy nomination, not this year, last year. And I think that may have fed in for a little bit for her as well, because The Housewives has never gotten an Emmy nomination.
She loves her dogs, and she describes one of her dogs, Harrison, which I had to laugh at this, as Jax in a fur coat because he's so naughty.
Crazy.
And this is where Allison takes this opening to like dive into Vanderpump Rules and Jax Taylor, one of the most iconic stars from this show.
Yeah.
Watching old Vanderpump Rules is, I mean, I know that Demi Lovato recently was like, I just went back and watched this because it is just like one of the greatest moments in culture of all time. Kind of like, it's like maybe what people felt like listening to like Pink Floyd Off the Wall for the first time, or like, where were you when you saw Oops, I Did It Again? That is what watching season one and two of Vanderpump Rules is like. But what's especially wild about that show, and Alex Baskin, the producer, talks about this all the time, is the fact that they were also incredibly good looking, working at this one restaurant owned by Lisa Vanderpump, who was already a successful star. And they were for real friends. They were living together. They were dating each other. The drama, the chaos, it was all real.
Yeah.
None of it was puppeteered by producers.
Right.
Look, Real Housewives, she did really well on that show. Vanderpump Rules, that is what elevated her to an entirely new echelon. No wonder the women around her had to take her down a peg, and there was definitely a lot of envy.
For sure.
Because, like, that is one of the most successful Bravo spinoffs, if not the most successful, probably of all time, no?
For sure. As a spinoff, yes.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
I think she's really proud of it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's still coming back.
Well, I guess this is the thing, is if they can make Lightning Strike twice, right, with a whole new cast.
Do you think?
The magic of it was that they all were genuinely friends, and it's kind of like the Housewives groups, like, when the shows originated, they were following people who had organic connections. And then you have these new additions, or in the case of Roni, for instance, a full reboot, where you are kind of handpicking, cherry picking these casts and then getting them to be friends through that. You can make it work, but it's different than an organic group. Right.
And what's so interesting about what's come out about the show now from the original cast is how much Lisa was producing in real time.
Yeah.
I mean, have you heard Sheena talk about this?
Not off the top of my head, but I know that Sheena has talked about it.
She kind of kicked off the whole show because she had an affair with one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills husbands.
Yes, that was kind of the backdoor pilot, was that she I'll leave it at that. I was going to make a dirty joke and I won't.
I mean, it was right there for the taking.
Yeah, exactly. But,
no pun intended. She has said that LVP was like, you should be here at this time and call this person at this time, and was like posing as a friend and a boss and a mentor and a confidant. But really, she was working in the best interests of the show and the producers. But there is this element of LVP of like a wolf in sheep's clothing, or a wolf in like frilly pink clothing and diamonds. She's kind of scary, the way that she moves. It's like smile to your face and stab you in the back. None of it is upfront and direct. And I think that is the thing that we value so much in reality television, is people who like say it to your face and say it straight. And yeah, we love authenticity. And it's like, it's really insidious when you're like, I don't know what this person is thinking and how they're going to move next. Yeah, even these photos, I'm like, she's giving that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's in this, like, what, the cherry red gown.
So Allison here goes, Vanderpump almost didn't go back to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for season 7 because of a roughly 5-episode feud with Lisa Rinna over whether Yolanda Hadid had Lyme disease or Munchausen's. So Munchausen's is, like, a type of hypochondria.
Well, I think Munchausen's isn't that not where you kind of, like, convince yourself you have a condition.
Convince yourself you're sick. So
Lisa Rinna famously looked up the definition on camera.
Yeah, she looked up the definition on camera and she accused Yolanda of having this illness, we'll call it.
Yes.
And so this became like a huge plot point and carried on for a very, very long time. The reason I'm like pulling this out though is because I really wanted to ask you, I don't even know if I can ask you this.
Do it.
Or if this is like an off-record conversation. Seeing Bella Hadid sick again with tubes and Yolanda posting her like in a hospital bed, why do you need to show the world the suffering?
And I get that.
That has been a running theme. They've been doing that for a decade. Yolanda and Bella and all of them, it's like kind of proof that they are going through
right.
it.
And I guess because it has, I think maybe because of the fact that it was scrutinized in the first place, maybe that's a complex. Also, I think there's this mentality, especially as public people, that by documenting and showing your, as you put it, suffering, you are shining a light on a disease. And I think, I don't know the stats on Lyme, but I know that Lyme is fairly rare. I mean, even the Bella post that you just mentioned, I know that Yolanda commented and wrote Lyme Warrior.
That sounds like someone who loves scooters.
Well, I hope that whatever she's going through, that she's also eating 2 almonds, chewing them really well.
Yeah.
That's the key to
health. I mean, never. Is that what birthed the term almond mom, do you think? It has to be.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
That was one of the most egregious.
Whether or not people would admit that that's what birthed it.
I mean, that I cannot believe they caught that on camera.
Take 2 almonds and chew them really well.
For context, Gigi Hadid was on a shoot. She called Yolanda, her mother, and said, I think I'm about to pass out. And she was like, well, if I was you, I would take 2 almonds and chew them really well. That's how you fuel up.
Energy. You know, there's a lot of health properties in almonds.
There's protein, just not a lot in 2.
Two is, you're really asking a lot of those almonds.
Yeah.
You're really... But that's where the chewing comes in.
Exactly.
You chew them really well.
Yeah, you never know what can come out of a good chew.
Exactly.
That's Yolanda's guide to life. Did you notice in this profile that, and this is absolutely no slight on Allison because she is an incredible writer and I think she, beyond that, is a great interviewer and gets a lot out of people, but that Lisa Vanderpump kind of gave nothing?
Oh, for sure. That's, I think, part of why there's a debate around whether or not you could say Lisa is the queen of the housewives, because what has she given or gone through on camera? Let's compare her to Luann, right? Where Luann has gotten divorced twice. She's gotten arrested. She's gone to rehab. She's done all these different things. We've seen her have this one-of-one arc mm-hmm. as a human being on the show. Whereas Lisa, by her own admission, says, I'm the narrator, not the narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think in this profile, it's kind of the same thing. It didn't illuminate to me anything new.
About
if
her.
Anything, it cemented what her image, she wants it to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just pithy one-liners.
Correct.
Like that is the entire profile and her entire presence on the show.
I will say the way that she's described in the profile, and I think for instance, the way that she started out where she was self-made, to me, it felt very similar to Candy from The Housewives of Atlanta. She also self-made. She started in an R&B group. She then had a solo career. She wrote songs. She won a Grammy for writing No Scrubs. She was successful as a musician And then she gets cast on Housewives. She's still making music. She then parlayed that success into her ventures, which include her restaurants. She produced a Broadway play that Denzel Washington was just in. She has a line of sex toys, which was documented on the Housewives. I actually have notes on this.
Oh my God, I love you.
Because I felt the comparison. They're self-made entrepreneurs. They're both kind of the glues of their group. And they both have strong relationships with Bravo. So her husband was a producer on the show. This is the example. Candy married a Housewives producer.
Oh, we've come full circle.
Her mom very vocally did not want her to marry Todd because she had so much money and he did not.
Really?
And still, it's like Todd and Mama Joyce. It's an up and down thing. Yeah. She is someone who's given, I would argue,
everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Lisa had it all already.
Yeah.
We watched Candy get it all.
Yes.
And get to a similar point. She's not as opulent with it, but it's very well known and it's a running thing on Atlanta that she is all about her money.
Allison points this out in this profile where she's like, she is not above shilling out for anything. Flat tummy tea.
Flat tummy tea was such a throwback. When I read that, I went, wow, so that's a relic of 2017.
Yeah, very like hashtag ad, hashtag
flat. Did you ever try flat tummy tea?
No.
We should have at the time. We should have.
It's a laxative,
like,
right?
Oh, yeah. It was fully just like a front for you're going to go to the bathroom a whole lot.
If you're just going to want to get things moving.
Well, now we have Ozempic, so.
Yeah. Technology has improved.
We've advanced. 2017 in some ways feels like not that long ago, but in other ways, it's a distant memory.
No, the way that the kids are romanticizing like 2017 right now, the late 2010s, it's quite disturbing.
Was it that different? I guess in some ways.
I mean, it was just like a good Coachella lineup. And
your iPhone had one camera instead of three.
In the first year of this current presidency.
Things look different.
It was pink pussy hats and we were in the streets with them. There's no one who loves pink like Lisa Vanderpump.
I mean, you're paying tribute with your pink pajamas.
I know. And pumpkins for
spooky season.
I know, for spooky season. I'm gearing up.
I stopped into Trader Joe's on the way here because I needed a juice shot to recover from last night.
Oh, yeah.
They had the pumpkin spices out. Everything.
I have to say, I did indulge in the pumpkin spice Trader Joe's cake this week.
Love.
Yeah, the sheet pan cake.
Listen, I could be a basic fall girly every once in a while.
Totally. It's Christian Gore autumn to me every time it drops below 75.
Hallelujah.
I do have a gotcha question for you.
Get me.
Biggest onset regret.
Wow. I think it's when I did MILF Manor.
Okay.
There was one night, it was a learning moment for me. Just because it was the night of the most chaos on that show, where we did have a cast member ultimately quit.
Whoa.
And I think there was just so much happening and there were times that I was just like observing it and like watching it happen. And mind you, sometimes that does happen. There are times where you're not pulling the strings and it's just kind of happening all around you. The other thing about it was that it was late in the night. This was like close to when we were wrapping for the day.
Okay.
I felt like, oh, whoa, I don't know if I know what to do here.
Mm.
So for me, it was a bit of like...
So you took a step back rather than like intervening? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't my instinct to like jump in and go, okay, let's do this and this and this and this. And mind you, again, later end of the day, we had kind of a skeleton crew. There wasn't like everybody all on board. It was like...
So you feel like if you had stepped in sooner, maybe a cast member wouldn't have left?
Okay, so setting the scene, we are at the manor and it's like late in the night. Some of the cast has gone to bed. One of the cast members... The women, one of the MILFs, a fellow MILF had developed a relationship with one of the guys, one of the dads that she was eyeing.
Okay.
And she caught a glimpse of it. She went to bed and then comes back out and she's like,
I'm done. I'm like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, huh? What? And so, of course, it's keep her, get her, get her to stay, get her to stay. But ultimately, she had made up her mind and there she goes. Got so in it. That was one element. There was also other chaos going on.
Yeah.
So for me, was the regret is not, I guess, in that moment being prepared for there's a cast member who wants to quit. There's one who's over sobbing about this. There's this one who's mad at this. There's this going on here. These two are pissed at each other. All the different scenarios that were at play. And like, I wish I had that. The instinct to know where I should be or what I should be doing versus kind of waiting to be told where to go.
You were like, I wish I just had the initiative.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, totally. And so that, I think the next day when I was talking with my crew members about, oh, this was what happened and this was how people who'd worked on other shows were like, oh, this is some of the most chaotic television I've ever been part of.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, that was a chaotic show.
And it was just because of the setup, right? Just because of
the, partly the setup,
the family dynamics.
I think that's part of it, is that you have the family dynamics, but you also have the fact that, like, as a producer, you're meant to build trust with your crew.
Yeah.
And when you then pull the wool over and say, "Oh, surprise! Your sons are here. Your dads are here," mm-hmm. then there's a bit of like, "Oh, wait! You didn't tell me that my kid was here. You didn't tell me that my dad was coming." And then it's harder to, over time,
develop trust
in difficult situations, because they're already a bit apprehensive about the whole process.
Whoa, yeah, that's so real. Element.
We didn't, like, on Are You My First, there was no, everyone coming in knew that they were going to be a virgin.
There was right? no so, gotcha moment, yeah, you might yeah. say.
Everyone knew that they were going on to date other virgins. So the trust element was there.
In reality, it's like, how do you handle something where it's like, extreme interpersonal dynamics, so complex, and you're what, how old at that time, like mid-20s or something, like, yeah, how are you able to navigate that?
And but that's also that, I think that was the beauty in it, is that, like, in hindsight you can go, okay, this is extraordinarily chaotic,
yeah, extreme circumstances, yeah.
extreme circumstances, yeah. But the rare opportunity where you can, like, learn by observing or learn by doing and being there, you know.
What would be your dream show to work on?
I am very curious to do Love Island.
Yes.
I would be so fascinated, because I think there are parallels to the fast pace I've worked in on other shows. I've done a couple of dating shows as well. So I think that one, where it's like done in real time, you are kind of absorbed in it, but also it's, you get the gratification of the audience response in real time. And I think any reality show that listens too much to the audience is doomed, because if you're only...
And they did.
See, if you're doing fan service...
Yes. I mean, they listened to Nickelandria. They listened to all of it.
That was fan service.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. They literally read fan letters out on their final date. I mean, come on. But then, I mean, I guess they do have to read their tweets. And they took away that this season.
So this is my first year watching Love Island.
Oh, wow. So you have no context.
I know about movie night. Like, I know about some of these elements.
Yeah.
But I hadn't actually watched the show myself. Besides, like, little bits and pieces.
One of the most famous segments of the show was that they used to have the cast read out dark and, not very kind tweets that were made about various cast members, but with the name blanked out. And then they would have the cast fill in the gaps. So if they said, for example, like, "I think blank is fake and only here for the money," then the cast would have to be like, "Sierra."
Ooh.
Yeah, a kind of smart and diabolical way to approach, like, cast dynamics, because they were having to...
This was what they morphed into the Standing on Business challenge, right? Where they had the mail and they
yes,
had to read the letters.
Exactly.
But it was the letters from other cast
members. Other cast members versus, like, bringing in the public. And so that was what was interesting about the Nickelandria of it all and reading fan mail, because it was, like, a kinder twist on what they'd done in the past with tweets. But it was very interesting. I'd love to see you on that show, and I'd love to hear about it when you come back. You'll have to come back on and talk
to
us about it.
Back to the chair.
Oh, thank you so much, Will.
What a treat.
What a treat. This was a dream.
This is also just like us hanging out. Like, this is the conversations we always have anyways.
I know. There was a moment where I was like, oh man, are we too inside baseball here, or are we too in the weeds? Because this is truly our dynamic, is like analyzing these shows, analyzing these people, because they are fascinating to us.
Well, so why not just hit record?
We're just two bitches with a mic.
Telling each other exactly.
And telling each other exactly.
Gorgeous, sexy, hot, intellectual. Did I say sexy? I goes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Uncover Girl. Please rate and review the podcast. Any bad publicity is good publicity, but my ego is also fragile, so compliments would be much preferred. If you want to get deeper under the covers, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl for bonus episodes and content, or you can follow us at Uncover Girl Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. DM us your inspiration or anything at all. I just want to hear from you. We'll see you next Tuesday. Mwah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.